want you to think life-threatening infections.
Progression of disease is really rapid.
We may need some major surgical interventions.
Alarm bells would have been going off for sepsis and neck fascia infection.
This is now a life-threatening gamut.
The antibiotics you choose actually mattered. What's going through your mind?
Greetings, everyone, and welcome back to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. Mike Winters here from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. Joined on this podcast by none other than EM Critical Care Superstars, Dr. John Greenwood and Dr. Peter W. John, and then Peter, how are you doing this podcast?
Doing well, Michael. Thanks for asking. We're in the summertime in Philadelphia. Hospitals inundated with trauma, unfortunately, this past week, but we're keeping busy.
And at RM, we just dodged Hurricane Barry in New Orleans. Still got areas like Lake Charles and Lafayette for Louisiana, but we dodged a big one. No flooding, no real wind damage, so we consider ourselves pretty fortunate.
And we are so thankful to hear that news, Peter. We missed you last podcast when we talked about anticoagulation reversal. And for those of you who are regular listeners of CCPEM, you'll notice that Rob, this podcast, is out doing some much-needed R&R with his family for summer vacation. Now, to our clinical topic, it's very, very timely. Certainly, it's been a hot topic in the news. And as we were talking about ahead of recording, maybe very pertinent to Louisiana, our folks in the Gulf who are sustaining some flooding from Hurricane Barry and the tropical storm. All of that water coming in, that warm water, really sets up for a certain specific illness that we are seeing a little bit more frequently, especially in our area. So a hot topic here for this podcast. I'm going to turn things over to John, who is going to take us through this podcast discussion.
Well, thanks, Mike. So this was, for me, very interesting, but a very sick patient that came through our emergency department ended up being admitted to one of our ICUs. So this was a 54-year-old gentleman who really only presented saying that he had a history of some what he called liver problems, but he wasn't really sure what it was. He just remembers a doctor at some point told him he had some liver issues. He presented the ED actually with leg pain. Now, this wasn't atypical for him in the sense that he's had similar types of issues in the past, but this was a little bit different in one way. So he was on a family vacation with his family down in Delaware. So lived in Philadelphia, but Delaware has some great beaches and some really cool bay areas for fishing and crabbing and that sort of thing. And he was on a vacation with his family and for about a week, and he returned to Philadelphia yesterday when he developed this weird kind of pain right in his right lower leg. Now, the pain started out as kind of an ache, but quickly spread to become really sharp. And then he also developed some GI symptoms, which included some nausea, vomiting, and watery diarrhea. Now, on arrival into triage, he had a pretty significant fever, so at a temperature of almost 103, and was hypotensive with a systolic in the 80s and a MAP of the high 40s, low 50s. And when we did his exam, he had a pretty significant swollen erythematous right calf that was pretty indurated and had some weird kind of ecchymotic blisters or bulla on them. So the resident who initially saw him was obviously concerned for necrotizing fasciitis, but what are you guys thinking at the bedside? You have someone comes in, looks pretty sick with a red swollen leg. What's going through your mind? What we should be thinking about right up front? Mike, maybe start with you.
Well, I think even in this early portion of training with your resident, thinking necrotizing fasciitis really would have been close to the top of my differential. It's something that we see relatively routinely in inner city Baltimore with our patient population. And the fact that he's presenting with signs of circulatory failure, signs of shock, and has a pretty good source, you know, I'd be certainly pulling the sepsis septic shock lever and initiating that resuscitation. Low-grade fever, leg pain, I think we'd still be considering maybe not neck fascia, but a pretty bad cellulitis, probably less likely to be an acute DVT. That trip to Delaware was, I'm guessing, probably only just a few hours and not really significant. And with the signs of nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, the degree of fever elevation and his blood pressure in the absence of cardiopulmonary symptoms, probably thinking less likely to be a VTE or probable PE, but certainly the way he's presenting, alarm bells would have been going off for sepsis and a neck fascia infection.
Okay. So, Peter, how about you? Maybe going along with that neck fesh diagnosis, any particular bugs you're worried about or other diagnoses?
Well, you know, I think all of the bugs that are associated with sepsis, septic shock, soft tissue infections, and hemorrhagic bulla, this is now a life-threatening gamut of pathogens. And so the pathogens that you want to really be thinking about, we talked about deep space. So clostridial species, strep can play in this ballpark and can present just like this. In my neighborhood, in the deep south along the Gulf Coast, particularly late spring all the way through to early fall, we're thinking lots of Vibrio vulnificus for this. But again, what I want you to think about is skin and soft tissue infection and hemorrhagic bulla. And when you see that combination, this is when we want our surgeons really at the bedside. Not, I'm going to admit them with broad spectrum antibiotics. This is, we may need some major surgical intervention. So bring them to the bedside and don't play around with simple consultation and we'll see them in the morning. You want them there with you in the ED.
Well, Peter, you bring up some really excellent points, and the two of you master clinicians are really on the right track. And this was, in fact, a case of early vibriosis, and we'll talk you through what the hospital course was more towards the end. But for me, it was a great opportunity to go through the clinical care with this patient, teach about it a little bit. And as we got a little bit more history, what made the diagnosis a little bit easier for us was he started telling us about, he had this scratch on his leg that he said when he was crabbing, one of the crabs kind of got him with his claw. And so we kind of put those together. He was in the bay with some of the shellfish. But before I get too far on it, maybe, Mike, if you wouldn't mind, walk us through a little bit about Vibrio and particularly why it's worrisome if a patient presents with a critical illness and setting a soft tissue infection.
Well, as you mentioned, John, this is an incredibly timely topic. Certainly, there's been some increase in incidence of cases, and that's actually garnered national news attention. I've seen some things on the nightly news with respect to an increase in cases. So it's definitely something that needs to be on all of our radar. Now, we'll go through this fairly quickly, but many of you recall that Vibrio vulnificus, it is a gram-negative rod bacteria that lives in bodies of salt water and has an extremely high case fatality rate in excess of 50%. In the U.S., it actually is the leading cause for seafood-related deaths and in general causes about 80,000 illnesses a year and unfortunately kills about 100 folks each year in the U.S. Now, in general, this organism tends to live in the tissues of oysters, which are the most common, but can also live in the tissues of clams, mussels, crabs, and really any other crustaceans. From a location standpoint, as Peter mentioned, the most common location is in the Gulf of Mexico, but as the news has recently reported and as we are seeing an increasing prevalence, most notably in the Northeast here where you and I practice, John, in the Mid-Atlantic, Delaware, Maryland, Lower Pennsylvania, especially this year. Warmer water temperatures increases the risk overall of this infection, as with these warmer temperatures, there's an increase in bacterial densities, especially when the water temperature is greater than 70 degrees. So overall, especially in our at-risk patients, want to beware of ingesting raw or undercooked shellfish. This is known to increase the risk not only of Vibrio, but other infections as well. And so in this patient, we're thinking about Vibrio, but in terms of these shellfish or other organisms, also got to consider Salmonella, typhoid fever, some other viral pathogens. So potentially the hepatitis viruses, most notably Hep A, and some of the Calici viruses. Overall, Vibrio is the most lethal infection associated with the consumption of raw oysters. So definitely oysters being the most common at-risk crustacean. Vibrio vulnificus in general is an opportunistic infection. And so who do you really want to be thinking about this in? And as your patient, John, that liver disease certainly is one of the highest risk factors. People who are cirrhotic, who have alcoholic liver disease, have Hep B, have Hep C. In fact, Hep C virus, it's in fact 80 times more likely to develop infection with Vibrio. Also, people at risk other than liver disease are those with hemochromatosis, those with renal disease, diabetics, especially anyone who is immunosuppressed. Now, just a few interesting prevention facts before we delve into the clinical characteristics. The CDC recommends that really we as clinicians warn patients, especially those who have liver disease, to avoid raw oysters. And California's done a pretty good job. They've been fairly aggressive about Vibrio prevention. They've actually banned the importation of raw oysters from the Gulf during the periods of April 1 through October 31st. But once again, big picture, why we're talking about this, the increasing climate temperatures, is certainly in our mid-Atlantic region, are increasing surface temperatures and resulting in Vibrio increasing in terms of density in these non-endemic areas.
That was an awesome review, Mike. And some key pearls there for me were patients with liver disease are 80 more times likely to develop serious infection. And certainly as the water temperatures nationally are going up, that we're not only seeing this in the Gulf of Mexico, we're seeing this all over the country. So definitely something to be concerned about. Now, with this concern, Peter, walk us through some of the clinical characteristics of someone who might present with an acute Vibrio infection.
That's great. Just to dovetail off of what Mike told us about, again, overlaying all of this, patient with complicated liver disease or underlying liver disease. So there are basically three separate syndromes, and this is typically confirmed by either routine blood cultures in the setting of sepsis or concern for bacteremia, or abject tissue cultures in the setting of skin and soft tissue infections. And so there's two main groups, and then a third that occurs less likely. So the two main ones are wound infections, roughly about 45% of the time, and then primary sepsis or septicemia with bacteremia, about 43% of the time. And then the other player that's a tag along is about 5% of the time, it'll be associated GI infections. Think about it, over 95% of primary septicemia cases report the consumption of raw or undercooked oysters less than 7 days prior to onset of their infection. So they're stuck on the leg or stuck in the hand with a crustacean or a clam or an oyster. This is, I'm ingesting raw shellfish in the setting of underlying liver disease. Now, the wound infections really show up like this patient that John described, necrotizing soft tissue infections. Really, that's what you're looking for. They occur when an open wound is exposed to warm seawater or exposed to cooked seafood, right? Seafood drippings, if you will. And characteristic skin lesions are classically in the lower extremity and appear as cellulitis with ecchymosis. We know that Vibrio vulnificus produces extracellular toxins. These toxins go on and destroy tissue and basement membranes of blood vessels, which then results in this hemorrhagic bulla picture. And those occur within about 24 hours of the onset of illness. So if you see lower extremity cellulitis with hemorrhagic bulla in the setting of liver disease, you should be peppering people with any raw oyster, any exposure to brackish or salt water, and asking along those lines. When we talk about the GI infection, again, which is less likely, representing about 5%, this is typically self-limited. Very, very few deaths are associated with this reported disease. What we see are typically symptoms of fever, chills, diarrhea, some vomiting. You want to think along the lines of a cholera-like presentation, but can be complicated with septic shock as well.
Awesome stuff, Peter. Yeah, big pearls, definitely. Those cellulitis type and soft tissue infections with ecchymotic bulla are almost in some ways pathognomonic in the setting of saltwater exposure. Great pearl there. So I'd like to walk through kind of the treatment strategy for Vibrio, because it is important as the emergency frontline clinician to get this right early. So Vibrio-associated sepsis patients come with septic shock, just primary sepsis. Really, you're just going to start your septic care like you normally would, really aggressive fluid pressure management and antibiotics. Now, why this is important, though, is because Vibrio does have a short incubation period, so progression of disease is really rapid. And the disease, whether it's a soft tissue infection, can really progress quickly. So early antibiotics within the first 24 hours of illness onset, and they may not be in the hospital yet when the illness actually starts, but within 24 hours of onset can actually decrease the mortality to 33%. Now, compare that to if the patient doesn't arrive or they sit in the emergency department for a little bit of time. If antibiotics are given within 24 or 48 hours of onset, mortality spikes to 50%. And then if it's over 72 hours, it's nearly 100%. So this is an emergency department diagnosis and treatment that needs to happen. It can't wait until they go on to ICU. Now, certainly we'll give these patients with suspected soft tissue infection antibiotics, but the antibiotics you choose actually matter. Just as we talk all the time with sepsis care, it's not just early antibiotics, but it's appropriate antibiotics. So which antibiotics would we choose in the patients with Vibrio? Well, there's a couple options. So certainly you want to consider your broad spectrum antibiotics covering for MRSA like vancomycin, as well as all the other gram positive and gram negative drugs with something like cefepime or zosyn. But you also want to add on a third antibiotic. Now, this may be one of two choices. So it can be doxycycline. So certainly a dose of IV doxycycline of 100 milligrams twice a day would be appropriate, or ciprofloxacin also covers Vibrio quite well. Now, if you have a soft tissue infection, early and aggressive surgical debridement is going to be critical in terms of source control. Now, there are some adjunctive treatments that you can consider. So Vibrio, being that it really feeds off of iron stores, some hematologists and ID experts may recommend early iron chelation therapy with a medication called deferoxamine. So I'm interested, Peter, if this is something that routinely gets done in New Orleans, but there is some clinical data suggests that ciprofloxacin, in addition to an iron chelator like deferoxamine, is synergistic and might be superior to antibiotic therapy alone. Is there any preferred strategy down in New Orleans at Charity Hospital or anything like that?
Right. So we're big fans of the doxy movement, right? So we give the doxy early and often with any remote suspicion of Vibrio. And if they're failing to respond or circling the tank, we'll add the deferoxamine, but it's not an early agent that we use.
Excellent. So that leads us probably into the conclusion of our patient. So this patient did in fact test positive for Vibrio, and we did in fact treat him with Cipro, and then he went on to get iron chelation therapy upstairs on hospital day two. So throughout the course of this hospital stay, unfortunately, this gentleman did lose his lower extremity to the point where he left the hospital with a below the knee amputation. And he was also diagnosed with hemochromatosis. So those liver problems that had never really been worked up ended up being hemochromatosis, which unfortunately placed him at risk for this opportunistic infection of Vibrio when he was down enjoying his vacation at the shore. But ultimately, he did recover and he was able to leave the hospital in good condition with a prosthesis and was hopefully be able to enjoy a number of other safe family vacations. So a very interesting patient for me. I had a chance to see something I haven't seen probably since I was training down in Maryland. I remember we'd had one patient that was transferred to us with a Vibrio soft tissue infection, but a very challenging case up front when we were trying to figure out what's our differential and what should we be worried about in this unique patient.
That was a simply outstanding discussion, John, Peter. Very timely topic, lots and lots of pearls in there. And for those of you that have just listened to the podcast, we will have a handout for you that is attached to this episode. And it actually is based on not only the recent news articles with respect to Vibrio, but really a great review from the recent publication in the Annals of Internal Medicine. So we'll list that all in our handout. If you have any questions for us on this episode on Vibrio, please shoot us an email through the website. Let me ask Peter and then John, what are your final take-home pearls from this case, this topic?
So one of the things I would just remember in the setting of cellulitis and hemorrhagic bulla, I want you to think life-threatening infections. And again, the differential is going to be neck fash. It's going to be clostridial infections predominates. But if you have somebody with liver disease or exposure to salt water or shellfish, you really, really need to think about Vibrio and you need to add doxy on your regimen for antibiotics.
No, absolutely, Peter. And I think that all of us are very familiar with that third antibiotic, most of the time being clindamycin for those clostridial infections. But adding on that appropriate antibiotic of doxy or cipro is super important. And again, for me, understanding or realizing how quickly this disease can progress, getting this right in the emergency department, getting that critical history of maybe liver disease or exposure in that salt water, maybe vacation or whatever, as tipping me off as saying maybe I should consider Vibrio, particularly in the Northeast, keep an eye out for acute Vibrio infection.
Outstanding discussion, gentlemen. Well, that's going to bring us to a close for this podcast. Once again, shoot us any email questions that you have as follow-up, and we will look forward to talking to you on our next CCPM podcast. Bye for now.